And this is Jeff Blankford. Joe Loria has been an independent journalist covering international affairs with a focus on the Middle East for more than 20 years. He has worked as an investigative reporter for the Sunday Times of London and Bloomberg News, as reporter from the UN, for the Boston Globe, the Montreal Gazette, the Wall Street Journal, London Daily Telegraph, Johannesburg Star, and The National. He has also written for the New York Times, Washington Post, and Salon.com and The Guardian, and now is the editor of Consortium News, having taken over the reins of this important alternative news site following the death of its founder, Robert Perry, who you've heard on a number of times on this program. It's a great pleasure to welcome once again Joe Loria to Takes on the World.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Glad to be back on the show.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you here. Let's begin by your telling our listeners who Bob Perry was and why he was so important.
Yes. Well, Bob Perry died unexpectedly at the end of January. He was 68 years old. They had a memorial for him. His wife Diane put it on April 14th. And there, anybody who didn't know anything about Bob would learn, and I learned a lot more about him at that memorial. Bob grew up in Massachusetts and worked for the AP, first in the Providence, Rhode Island. Bob was from Massachusetts, and he started in the AP Bureau in Providence, Rhode Island. Actually, he left Providence to go to Washington. The same summer I went to Providence to work as a summer vacation reporter for the Providence Journal. Bob, when he arrived in Washington, began covering Congress and a few other agencies here, and then he got into investigative reporting. And together with his partner, Brian Barger, who spoke very well about Bob at the memorial, they began to uncover stories about Iran-Contra that were not known at all. They, in fact, are the ones who brought the country's attention to Oliver North working out of the basement. Jill Abramson, who happened to be a neighbor of the Perrys, of course, the former executive editor of the New York Times, she was at the memorial and she spoke. And she told a funny story about how she was sitting around the dinner table one day and he was talking about this guy, this colonel in the basement of the White House, and that he was getting money from Iran to pay the Contras going behind the back of Congress, which had cut off funds to Reagan's Contras, and she thought he was completely nuts. Bob Broke is well known for breaking those stories on Iran-Contra, and then he later wrote a few stories about the October surprise, which was that the Reagan administration, the Reagan campaign team, contacted Iran and asked them not to release the hostages during the campaign because it would help Carter win, but to release them, funnily enough, the almost the exact hour that Reagan was being inaugurated, totally stage-managed. But Bob found out, and this is the core of Bob Perry and why Consortium News was founded in 1995 by Bob and his two sons, and which I spoke about at the memorial, is Bob tells you, if you see a lot of his YouTube videos, he's often asked in interviews why he started Consortium News. And the answer he gives was that essentially he got fed up with the resistance he was getting from editors to a lot of stories that were of great significance, national significance. They were putting obstacles in his way. He gives one story he's told often, that an editor at Newsweek told him that one of the Iran-Contra stories that he'd uncovered after months and months of research, dozens of sources, documents, you know, the thing kept getting sent back for editing, and Brian Barger told the story how one of them, they got everything they could get on Oliver North, and the editor said, let's just get Oliver North to confess to this. And they wouldn't accept anything less than his admission, North, even though they'd had the thing solid. In this particular story, the editor at Newsweek told him, we can't use your story because we have to suppress it for the good of the country. And obviously, when I made what that, when that editor said that, he was not talking about the entire country, it's about the rulers of the country. It was for the good of the rulers of the United States. So Bob kept facing these obstacles, and he got fed up. He left Newsweek. He worked for a while at PBS Frontline, worked on documentaries, did a big one on October Surprise. He got fed up with that as well. He actually worked at Bloomberg, which he just really did not like. I couldn't stand working at Bloomberg. I don't know anybody really who's liked working at Bloomberg, so that was not a good place for Bob. It was in 1995 that his son Sam told him about the internet. And those were the days of dial-up on AOL or CompuServe, text only, no images. I mean, I started back then too. So they began in 1995 this online investigative journalism news magazine called Consortium News. And it was called Consortium News because Bob created a consortium for independent journalism. He knew that he was not the only journalist who was just trying to do his job and following facts where they lead in a nonpartisan, principled way, and that he was getting running into this kind of opposition from editors who were protecting powerful people in the United States. And he knew other journalists were out there, so he created this to open a space for other mainstream reporters who could not get their stories published. This would be a home for them. And that's exactly 16 years later how I got involved with Consortium News, because I was working at the Wall Street Journal at that time, and there were a couple of stories that I'd seen that were being suppressed, and this was not the first time this had happened to me. During the lead up to the invasion of Iraq in 2003, I was working for this Canadian chain in those days was called Southern News, and they published the Montreal Gazette and the Ottawa Citizen and the Calgary Herald and about 20 other newspapers. And I was covering the UN Security Council then. That's mostly my background, as a reporter based at the UN for 25 years. And I was covering what was going on at the Security Council as the Americans and the British were trying to get a resolution to authorize Bush's invasion in 2003. And they were running up against strong opposition, not just from Russia and China, but from Germany, which was a non-permanent member then, and France, which was a permanent member. So you had three permanent members, France, China, and Russia, who could veto any resolution the Americans were seeking to authorize the invasion of Iraq, which, of course, was necessary legally because Article 51, the self-defense paragraph in the UN Charter, was not operable. The United States was not being threatened by Iraq at that time or at any time, so they couldn't argue self-defense. And they then needed a Security Council authorization, which they couldn't get. So I was covering the story, highlighting the French, German, Russian opposition to this resolution, and I got a call from the foreign editor of Southern News at that time. He called me from Ottawa. He started berating me because I wasn't supporting the war effort. He told me his son was a Marine. I said, I'm sure he was very proud of his son, but my job is not to support the war. It's to report what's going on at the Security Council, and happens to be this opposition to the... So on the day of the invasion... Well, by the way, Kofi Annan, I should add, the then Secretary General, in a BBC interview, was berated by, pushed and pressured by the interviewer to say whether the invasion was illegal or not. And ultimately, Kofi Annan had to say, yes, it was illegal because it wasn't under Article 51, nor was there authorization from the Security Council. Now, the Americans made life hell for Kofi Annan after that. And there was a guy who was the UN ambassador at the time named John Bolton. And he basically caused a near nervous breakdown for Kofi Annan in the way he was treated because of his one statement that the invasion was illegal. And of course, John Bolton got a promotion, but on the day of the, as he's now the National Security Advisor, on the day of the invasion in 2003, I was fired. So I got fired, he got a promotion because I had written honestly and truthfully about the opposition of the Security Council. I was not cheerleading to this invasion. And then fast forward to 2011 at the UN Security Council, at the UN General Assembly, the Palestinians were going for a vote for observer state status, and I was covering the UN. I had been then for 2 years for the Wall Street Journal. I wound up covering for 6 years. But 2 years into it, I started seeing stories of mine being suppressed or changed. And my articles about the Palestinian vote kept mentioned that 130 countries recognized Palestine, so I had exchanged ambassadors. This kept getting out of my stories. So I got fed up with Bob, got fed up, and I found him and I gave him a story about that Palestinian issue, and he published it. That was back in November, I think, of 2011. And I wrote then, through the last 4 years of the Wall Street Journal, I was writing articles for Bob on Consortium News. Ultimately, that's how the journal got rid of me, because someone ratted me out. I was a contract reporter, not a staff member. I was allowed to write for the publications, but clearly Consortium News had a very different viewpoint than the Wall Street Journal does. So this is how Bob started this website. He got a lot of very good people to write for him. Ray McGovern became one of his most important writers, the former CIA agent and big critic of U.S. foreign policy. And he brought in a lot of people to write, and it became a very important site. It wasn't very flashy. It was for being an older crowd. It wasn't like one of these younger, new websites that have a better design or a flashier design, but it had serious reporting in there. Bob used the principles that we learned as mainstream reporters and applied them. And he was seeing, particularly towards the end of his life, and then the last article he ever wrote, which was a very, very sad and poignant piece about the state of American journalism. He saw that mainstream journalism was no longer even using those principles themselves, and they had become totally biased, and were not using evidence to back up assertions, particularly about Russia, U.S.-Russia relations, Russia's alleged role in the 2016 election. Bob became a big champion and a big skeptic, and one of the few. And he took a lot of flack for that. A lot of lies are spread about Consortium News, about our funding from Russia. In the last 2 days, I've learned that Consortium News is funded by Russian oligarchs or by RT, an absolute total rubbish. I've seen the books now as the editor. It is just the smears that we've seen against other people about Russia. So Bob Perry was a special reporter. He did his job, and he ran into problems. I think he wouldn't think of himself as a great reporter, but as somebody just trying to do his job. But of course, he was great because of that. He didn't compromise. He was not a careerist, as so many journalists are today, who, because of their vanity and their desire for living through the power of the people they cover vicariously, rather than holding up power to scrutiny on behalf of the American public, on behalf of all publics in the world. There is the government that always lies. Every government has people who lie in it. And then there's the people in between. It's the press that has to be the filter to challenge, to hold to account government and corporate leaders and verify what they say. And that's the whole process and the absolute essence of what the press should do. And that is lost. Bob saw that. Bob kept it alive. It's now my job to try to keep that alive, too.
Well, this is Jeff Blankford. You're listening to Takes on the World on KZYX, where my guest today is Joe Loria, the new editor at Consortium News. We've been talking about, he's been talking about the late founder and editor of Consortium News, Bob Perry, who died suddenly not long ago. And by the way, there will be a memorial in Berkeley on May 19th. At Berkeley's Unitarian Fellowship Hall, 1924 Cedar Street, 2 o'clock Saturday, May 19th. There'll be a tribute to Bob Perry, where Joe Loria will be speaking along with one of Perry's sons, Sam, plus Norman Solomon and Dennis Bernstein, host of KPFA's Flashpoints. It should be an important event. It's a fundraiser, but also a tribute to the memory of Bob Perry, one of the great American journalists. I want to quote what you wrote, what you said at the memorial back east, that the press's power is distinct from the government's. It is a power to hold governments accountable on behalf of the public. Bob understood that mainstream media's greatest sin was a sin of omission, leaving out of a story or marginalizing points of view at odds with the U.S. agenda, but vital for the reader to comprehend a frighteningly complex world. And you see, the omission of such news, you wrote day after day in newspapers and on television, adds up over the decades to what Bob called the lost history of post-war America. It is a dark side of American history: coups overthrowing democratic elected leaders, electoral interference, assassinations, and invasions. Omitting that history, you said, as it continues to unfold nearly every day, gives the American people a distorted view of their country, an almost cartoonish sense of America's supposed morality in international affairs, rather than just pursuing its interest, too often violently, as all great powers do. That's what it is. What's what I talk about on this program as well, and you put it so succinctly, and that's why I look to Consortium News as kind of an island in a swamp, talking about the swamps in Washington. It's a swamp of the mainstream media, which even saw supposedly liberal organizations defending freedom of the press jump on board censoring anyone who wasn't going along with the Russiagate agenda. Even before I contacted you, I spoke about Duma and cited articles that were on Consortium News from Robert Fisk and Anne Wright. You mentioned Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst who presented the briefs for Ronald Reagan. He no longer can get any airtime on even alternative media. It's very, very difficult because in these times where the news is so distorted and we get one picture, and I'm really happy to hear, I was wondering what was going to happen with Consortium News, and that you have taken it over was a great relief to me. I want to bring up what's really crazy, because when we spoke in December, we spoke about Russiagate and how everyone had jumped in on this, not questioning any of the accusations being made about the so-called hacking of the DNC emails. And the other day on Friday, I looked at the paper and I saw that this lawsuit had been filed by Tom Perez, a Democratic Party insider, suing Russia, WikiLeaks, and the Trump campaign for meddling in the 2016 election. I thought it was a joke. What's your response to that?
Well, I'm going to quote somebody you wouldn't think I would normally quote, a mainstream political analyst, Gloria Borger of CNN. She was asked that question. And she was asked, how much of this is hype and a stunt, a political stunt? She said, 100%. So if you've got people like Gloria Borger saying it's 100% stunt, this lawsuit, I don't think you need a comment from me, because I would say it's 150% stunt. No, I mean, it's a joke. And WikiLeaks has welcomed it because they think through discovery, this thing won't go anywhere. I don't think they want discovery. It is a stunt. And she said, Borger, it was a fundraising effort. They're going to run on Russiagate, on WikiLeaks. I mean, they have not learned one thing. I'm sure that you've gone over this on your show plenty of times, how the establishment Democrats did not learn one lesson from this. They are too caught up in their own class bias, their own power that they're trying to preserve, that they're nervous about, like all the rulers across the ruling class of the country is scared about this. What happened in that last election? They saw an insurgency on right and left, and their power, and rich, powerful people are always nervous about losing it. They partly just have, if they have any conscience left, they know that what's built on is not exactly on the up and up, and that they don't necessarily deserve the power and wealth that they enjoy. So the Democratic establishment knows that there's this left insurgency out there, the Bernie Sanders wing, and there could be others, and it's a real issue for them. But they're not answering it, or they're not even addressing it. They're going to stick with this Russia story, that Russia beat us, that's why Hillary lost, and they're going to try to take the next election. And as Gloria Borges said, this lawsuit was a stunt to raise money and to keep that line going, which is going to be a loser for them, I think. Most people, analysts, see that, who aren't inside that establishment bubble.
Well, the Democrats never really acknowledged the content of the emails, how embarrassing they were. But what message does this send to all those Bernie Sanders supporters who want to have a revitalize the Democratic Party and make it more responsible to the people, when the head of the DNC raises the emails as being something sacrosanct that shouldn't have been touched or exposed?
Well, legally they did own those emails, but they were stolen by someone, and they were legally published by WikiLeaks. Not illegal to publish stolen material. It's illegal to steal the material. They could never. They'd have to prove that Assange and WikiLeaks egged on. First, they tried to do that with Chelsea Manning, and they couldn't, and they'd have to say that they were somehow in cahoots with the Trump campaign and with Russia to do this, and that they encouraged the theft. And they most likely won't. They can't even prove that it was Russia that did it, A, and that, B, it was Russia that gave it to WikiLeaks. We just know that WikiLeaks got the emails from someone, and they published it, and that's totally legal. As far as Sanders Democrats, I mean, what more do they need to know to see that this Democratic establishment is not going to respond, except in the most cosmetic way, to their demands, to their interests? They are not interested in working class people, in formerly middle class people, or even middle class people who are threatened with their lifestyle there, or those who oppose America's interventions, military interventions abroad, which continue perpetually. There is a great feeling on right and left about those issues. And if you want to win, you're going to have to get those voters from right and left, particularly left if you're Democrat, and they're not going to appeal to those voters. Instead, they are suing WikiLeaks in Russia and the Trump campaign. I mean, this is a harebrained idea. Just legally speaking, politically, it's a big losing step, as their own mainstream commentators are saying. So the Bernie Sanders, in my view, supporters ought to look away from the Democratic Party, except Bernie Sanders himself will not do that. He is a Democrat, despite calling himself an independent. He wants the Democratic nomination again, clearly. He's going to stay in the fold. That's why he's taken various positions, including on Russiagate, although he's not hyping that, and I don't think that would be his strategy. Obviously, he's going to go back to criticizing the 1% and trying to defend average Americans against the 1%. But he has to play ball on various things like Russiagate. He has to keep quiet about what's going on in Gaza right now. He has to support the idea that Syria had been involved in this chemical attack in Douma, even though there hadn't been an investigation begun yet. So I think Bernie's just passed because he's still wedded to the party. He has to take these positions that he may himself not even necessarily believe in. That compromises him. That hurts him. That's going to hurt him with serious voters on the left who oppose what happened in the Trump strike in Syria, who do not believe Russia, that has been proven that Russia was in any way tampered with the election. But just what Bernie is playing a fine line there. He thinks he needs the party nomination, but he's going to have to take compromising positions whether he believes it or not. And that's going to hurt him, but it may not help him enough with the establishment Democratic voters, who are going to have some establishment fear, to may not be of the prominence of Hillary Clinton, although who knows if she doesn't want to get back in. But he will he take enough from that establishment opponent in the primary and still hold on to his to the left wing of outside inside the party, serious left wing, and people who left the party who are on the left? This is the calculation Bernie Sanders is making.
One of the things bringing up the whole WikiLeaks, who did what, whether it was inside job or hacked, Consortium News has been the only news outlet, as far as I know, to publish the statements of the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS, which Ray McGovern is one of the members. There are a number of former CIA officers and analysts, FBI, NSA, most recently Lawrence Wilkerson, former assistant Secretary of State to Colin Powell, an illustrious group of American former officials with credentials to back them up, mainstream credentials. But when they have taken positions critical of U.S. policy or challenging the facts as presented by the media, only Consortium News will publish this. It's extraordinary, the silence of so-called alternative media that in the past has been willing to challenge the government's the mainstream line, that doesn't do that anymore. And I want to say that this is an extraordinary phenomenon and needs to be challenged, as Consortium News is, and you have been doing it. I anticipate you're going to continue welcoming anybody right to contributing to Consortium News from that group of former intelligence professionals who have been challenging the government they once worked for.
Well, no doubt about it. The VIPs, we have kind of an exclusive, I think, on publishing their letters to the president, letters to the White House. I've heard from a source that they're often read at the White House, not that they're acted on. And they've started really at what I was talking before about the lead up to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. It was around then that the VIPs formed and sent their first memo to George W. Bush, pleading with him not to invade because there was no evidence of WMD in Iraq. So that was a pretty auspicious beginning for them, and that they were correct on that. Very few people were, and they've been correct on just about every issue since then. And they send their letters to the White House, and they are a voice, collective voice, that needs to be listened to by people in power because they have well over hundreds of years of experience in intelligence work together at high levels. And Colleen Rowley, the FBI whistleblower, Ray McGovern, as you said, Bill Binney from the NSA, these are seriously high officials who have a conscience, who took their job seriously, and just weren't, you know, career hopping and trying to politic their way to better positions and looking after number one. And they were looking after the country in the real sense that makes you think that if there were more people like this, intelligence agencies could actually do a useful job. But we know from their criticism and any serious look at the recent history of intelligence work, particularly since the Church Commissions of the 70s, which of course had blown the cover of all the illegality of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA from the end of the Second World War, basically one of these agencies were created, to the mid-70s. Since then, it has gotten worse and worse, and these people from intelligence agencies expose that, and they show how dangerous the intelligence agencies are. And as bad as Trump is, as dangerous he can be, we have a situation of intelligence agencies needing to be reined in, and they appear to have meddled in the election. And there seems to be more evidence of that than there is that Russia did, I'll tell you that. And that's the line that Bob Perry was taking, that Ray McGovern takes, and I take that independently. Our views predate Russia today, Russia, blah, blah, blah. I mean, hear that Russia has some kind of influence over our coverage is nonsense, because the positions that we take are way beyond, at least mine, began years before my criticism of U.S. foreign policy, years before there ever was an RT or anything like that. So this is what independence is, and we take a lot of attacks. I'm learning more and more about how Bob was attacked in vicious ways. I've been attacked. Ray McGovern certainly has. But you know what? We don't really care. I don't care anymore. I kind of laugh at this, because I think that if you follow the facts, you're going to come to the positions that we have, and we could be wrong on some details. But I think that's the essence of it, is we don't have a partisan position. Both parties are open to withering criticism and skepticism. And that's what I'm going to continue to try to do with Consortium News. Our coverage of the last month since I took over on April 1st is focused largely on Syria, because that was the main news story when Trump struck. And what were our two main issues about Syria were the legality of this military action and the evidence, the lack of evidence, because there had been no investigation. But if you watch mainstream television, cable news, the night of that attack, I mean, they're wheeling out these generals, many of whom have undisclosed contracts with arms manufacturers, and they're out there touting the equipment. They're actually doing advertisements under the guise of news about the equipment that's being used by the U.S. in these military attacks, where people often get killed underneath, where this equipment lands and explodes. So this is not the way Consortium News is going to cover this. And the New York Times, too, in their coverage, mentioned in one paragraph towards the end, which is classic New York Times style, that the OPCW inspectors were about to arrive the day that Trump decided to bomb. And that was the focus of our coverage from the very first night of the piece that I wrote. So we've written about Ukraine, labor. I had a piece from a writer in Europe about the European labor unions. One of the things I want to do is broaden the coverage away from just foreign policy and Russia getting these issues, although that will continue to be at the core. But I want to write more about labor. You remember, Jeff, in the old days, any major American metropolitan newspaper had a staff of labor writers.
Yes.
and that is, the New York Times apparently was the last paper, big paper, to have one, and he retired a couple of years ago, Stephen Greenhouse, I believe it was, and even he covered it more or less from the point of view of management, not labor. So I want to revive labor reporting, because this is something we need. So I'm looking for writers, if any of your listeners who have any background in labor unions or in journalism or both, which preferably, please get in touch. You can write to me at Joe Loria, one word, at consortiumnews.com. And pitch a story to me, tell me you want to write. We want people to write about labor, climate. I'm looking for correspondents in countries around the world. I want to get non-American voices into this website. I think we have some excellent American and British analysts about the Middle East, but I want Middle East voices in there. And I've reached out to a few Arabs in the Middle East, some living here in the U.S., who I want to write for us so that we can get the point of view of what it's like from the ground. I'm in contact with journalists in India. I want to get reporters in Europe. We do pay our writers as well. So we're not just looking for handouts for free stuff. We know what's involved in doing serious journalism, and we pay for serious journalism, not just for people popping off with their opinions. We need evidence backing up the analysis, and it's mostly analysis that we do. We'd love to be able to break news as well and get some kind of reporters with credentials in Washington and actually start digging into things. This is down the road. I have ideas to start a podcast, Consortium News Radio. So we've got plenty of ideas. It takes money. We are funded almost 100% from our readers. We have a few small foundations and no Russian oligarchs, I can assure you, of funding Consortium News.
I want to tell listeners that on Saturday, May 19th at 2 o'clock at the Universalist Church at Cedar and Bonita, 1924 Cedar, there is going to be a memorial for Bob Perry. Joe Loria will be speaking there along with Dennis Bernstein from KPFA Flashpoints, Norman Solomon, who many of you know, ran for Congress, along with Sam Perry, one of Bob Perry's sons. It's a fundraiser, but no one's going to be turned away. And if you go online on Consortium News, you will find a way to attend and buy a ticket if you wish online, which is what I did yesterday. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person, Joe, when I come down there on Saturday. One thing I wanted to mention is the whole case of WikiLeaks and how the emails were transferred or gotten onto WikiLeaks was very important, because the government and the media have pretended that 17 intelligence agencies agreed that this was a hack by the Russians, when in fact there was no proof. And the NSA was not one of those that did that. And in fact, it was only three agencies, members of which were selected by James Clapper. And the veterans, intelligence professionals for sanity, including two former NSA high officials, did an analysis and concluded that there were the hack, or the number of emails, was simply too large to have been hacked. It had to have been an inside job. And I reported that on the air, but I didn't see that anywhere else. And this is what Consortium News produces every day. There are new stories there, and you can go back and find old stories. And it's a way to, when people say, how do you keep up with what's going on? I say Consortium News, because the major foreign policy issues of the day are covered there by people, experts in the field or people on the ground. And the labor report, I recall when I went to UCLA in college, I worked for the LA Examiner, the Hearst paper. They had a good labor reporter. He was an important reporter on that staff. Labor was, I actually kind of think that the labor union, the AFL-CIO, as it became more and more a part of the Democratic Party, is partially responsible for letting this happen. I think they were more concerned with involving themselves with the Democratic Party or U.S. foreign policy, particularly during the Cold War, and they let the people they're responsible for, the workers, down. Well, what's your opinion on that?
I don't doubt that at all. But we shouldn't let labor union leaders get in the way of labor issues and reporting on labor. I mean, one reason maybe a newspaper could say today, well, we don't need labor for us, because there are very few labor unions anymore, very few unionized workers. The percentage has gone down precipitously, as everybody knows, since the 1950s and 60s. But that doesn't mean the issues that that surround labor, that workers, have gone away. They've intensified, even if they're not represented by labor. It's not labor unions that I want to cover. It's labor. It's workers and their issues. But, of course, unions and their general failure, the ones that are left, they have failed in many cases, and you just mentioned one, to adequately represent workers' interests. So we would put, hopefully, if we get the right writers, we would put them, their feet to the fire as well. Not just the bosses who are going to be criticized for their neoliberal policies that are destroying lives across this country, but for the lack of unionization and laws against that, right to work, etc., But even the unions that exist, if we can get writers who understand how the unions operate from the inside or can get interviews with people at the union who will cover the unions as well as the issues of workers. So, but it's the workers' issues that never go away, even if there are zero labor unions left. That will be needs to be covered. But yes, the unions need to be covered as an authority and skeptically, like government will be covered or corporations will be covered. Anyone with power in any power center in the U.S. or in any country, it should be the target of the press. The press has to be an independent power outside of that on behalf of the people who don't have the time to be examining what their leaders, electors, and otherwise are doing. That's the role of the press. But instead, the press has aligned itself with the power that exists. Those power centers, they've become part of them, and co-opted for salaries, for fame, for careerism, for just horrible reasons.
We've come down to the end of the hour. I want to thank you very much. Joe Loria, Consortium News. You can meet him in 1924 Cedar, Saturday, May 19th, or go to Consortium News, and all the contact information is there. Correct?
Yes, it is. It's on the poster, which I published yesterday. So you can find it on the homepage. And at the bottom is the detail.
Thanks again for being our guest. Take care. Look forward to
You're
next
quite
time.
You're welcome, Jeff. Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.